This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Run from me, darling.
It's very creepy.
It's really creepy.
You know
creepy.
What's going to make it worse for everyone is I'm going to let them know Nando's not wearing any pants. Now listen to this music. Now let it all sink in.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you for that. I don't even want that visual. I don't even want that visual.
I'm trying to sit across from you.
Well, stop looking underneath the desk. Stop looking underneath the desk.
Oh,
what's
funny.
Going on there? Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Blacklist After Show on AfterBuzz. My name is Nando Velasquez. Not here this week. It's starting to be a common theme here. Braswell. What the hell's going on with him?
We need to put up a picture of him and throw things at him.
I think if he doesn't come next week, and I already talked to him, he said he's coming next week. But if he doesn't come next week, we're going to put a picture of him.
Yeah, question about it.
No
we
question.
We miss you, Braz, though.
We miss you.
You speak for yourself.
No, I miss him, and I missed you guys last week.
Whatever.
Somebody else was missing, apparently, last week. Yeah, so... Well, first, let's go, Mr. Joseph Sanfilippo.
It's nice to be here with you guys.
Yeah. And then sitting as far away from me as possible.
You're not wearing any pants.
He's not wearing pants.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. That's a good reason not to sit next to me.
I didn't know they made tidy whities out of silk, man. This is creeping me out.
It's just, the longer the song goes on, the creepier it gets.
So true.
Joining across from me, back from her anniversary tour.
Yes. Vegas was calling.
Yeah, Julia Carelli.
Win big. Hi, guys. Nice to be back.
Did you win?
A little bit. Sort of evened out.
If you, someone asks you, did you win big, and your answer has the word little, then you probably didn't win big.
Well, it's like a breaking even sort of thing.
Okay. Did you win big? A little. That kind of ruins the whole big thing. What?
What's that?
This is the music video for this song.
Oh, that makes sense.
Steve Lemieux is our producer, and he pulled up...
Oh, God, you guys really need to check this out on YouTube.
Yeah,
this is
if
amazing.
You're watching this on YouTube, this is very...
I have a sneaky suspicion we should start talking about the show, though.
Yes.
Yeah, we should. We're starting
despite
to
the fact that this is riveting.
Yeah, this is riveting. Yeah, let's move on to the show. The name of this episode is The Mombasa Cartel, and it's number 114. So again, somewhere like in the, you know, the lower three digits, the upper two digits, that's where we've been seeing a lot of these people. Another organization on the blacklist as opposed to a separate person. And, you know, let's just get this out of the way. Even before we start, all right? I feel like there's going to be some bragging in a second here.
There might
be a little bragging.
Should we say these three words together, you and I?
You could say it. I don't know if
you want me to say it.
You could say
it. Hold on. Let me get ready.
You ready? I want you to feel good about this.
Okay.
Julia was right.
Yes, I was.
Completely, totally, utterly right. And Nando won't even join me in saying it.
To contain myself.
And Stephen Lemieux has no applause for us, nothing.
I have two words.
Tell me.
I have two words. I can see it in two words. And it's going to piss you off.
Oh, God. What? Well, normally the things you say piss me off,
that's
so
true.
Let's hear it anyway.
So what?
Right, I'm up.
I told you he was going to piss you off.
He's not a nice boy.
I mean, this is
I
not...
I know it. The world knows it. I had two big predictions and one super big one, and it was totally right the effing nose.
I'll give you credit for one of them, but the other ones, I'm like, so what?
Wait, which one?
I'll give you credit for the fact that Tom is the source.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think
that she had him chained up behind the door.
Yeah, but that we kind of all figured out. We all figured it out
3 weeks, and she figured it out the first
week. You figured out that Tom was the source from week one when we started seeing this door, what was behind the door.
I was the only one to say that
you know
what,
you are. Okay,
I'll
give you that.
There you
okay.
go.
You don't need to argue with the man with no pants. I'm going to tell you straight up that you're right.
Don't make me stand up.
And I'm standing. I'm sitting here with the certitude of a man wearing a pair of pants.
You had to look down when you said that.
I had to double check.
Okay.
It's good. Thank you.
Let's get started.
Thank you for that.
All right. So I just want to get that out of the way. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk.
Don't worry.
I know. We're going to talk about it more. But I know that there are actually some people who are tweeting about it. So I want to at least bring that out there. So anyway. So very interesting flashback to start off this show. 29 years ago in Sierra Leone. Yeah, 29 years ago, a kid. Who we don't know at the time is Dembe, but we find out later on it is. And he's hanging out playing in the fields, and these guys with rifles, we don't know exactly who they are, we figure they're poachers, come over, and they pretty much kill his whole family because his dad, who we assume is the father of the family, ratted on them. So, big scene. Then we go from there to Paris, France. We go from Sierra Leone to Paris, France, where we see what looks like an African American gentleman getting killed. So I think definitely seeing those two scenes, they didn't really make sense next to each other right away. You know, still a little confusion to how are they related? If this man was the little kid 29 years ago or whatever else,
sure.
But really, really, really good play. And let's talk about this case. First of all, I want to say that this episode was probably, it reminded me a lot of The Stewmaker last season, which we all loved.
Yeah, it had a Stewmaker in
it. It had a very
definite super duper creep factor to this one.
Yeah.
This was a really kind of scary one. Good for Halloween. Good
with
timing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think there's something like, you know, Carl Stroyken, I think I'm going to get his name wrong, but who played Matthew, the really, really tall guy.
Jeff Carl? Matthew, you mean, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in a ton of things. We've seen him in so many, he's played an alien multiple times. He was in Men in Black, and he's done, I think he's done some Star Trek stuff.
Super creepy.
I think there's something about, like, the tall guys that do bizarre stuff. You know, the Stewmaker, same thing. Like a really tall actor, all by himself in the woods, doing crazy things. So, yeah, definitely had some echoey stuff to it.
Yeah, you know, the fact that it really didn't make sense who the bad guys were in this scene until, like, halfway through, in this episode until halfway through, when we got to see Matthew doing his taxidermy on the poachers, on that first guy. Really, really creepy, putting those black
eyeballs
in. And really disgusting, and seeing this little old lady. It's definitely straight out of a horror movie, this felt
like.
Like
House
Texas
of Waxy.
Chainsaw. House of Waxy, maybe Texas Chainsaw Massacre-y type of thing, feeling with his family. Peter is the normal-looking one. He was the one that was the room service guy at the hotel in France. He seemed to be the most normal out of them. The mother, definitely very creepy, very protective over her little baby boy, Matthew, who's like 7 feet tall. That scene when he gets up from the bathtub.
She bathes him every night.
She bathes him. He's Kris Kringle with his nice little soapy beard and everything. And apparently, very creepy. And even like at one point when, later on in the episode when he's out for his kills and Jeff Carl, played by Peter Fonda, who's awesome job. Right? Peter Fonda played
Peter
him, right?
Fonda.
Yeah, Peter Fonda. You know, when he was saying, don't kill wrestler, or kill him, but, you know, you can't.
None
of the taxidermy stuff. The mom was like, Matthew's not going to like that. So it's like a little bit of I mean, when you're 7 feet tall and creepy like that, I think, yeah, it's pretty easy to just.
They were all his friends. He needed friends because he was never allowed out of the house.
I know, really sad.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't know any better. What'd he know? They facilitated it.
I don't know.
The crazy of the family facilitated this.
Okay. Too creepy for me. I'm sorry. I can't. I just accept it and move on.
There was a level of empathy that we were made to feel for Matthew. No,
not
you. Okay.
No.
Never mind.
I didn't feel it. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't there. I recognize how other people could, but I didn't.
It's because you don't have feelings.
That's probably why.
That's probably why.
I have no empathy for crazy, tall murder men who take people's skin off and taxidermy.
Taxidermy.
I'm not into that.
Stuff them and whatever. Make a little campfire with a little recorded song in the background. A guy just holding his guitar.
That was really creepy when Wrestler came upon them.
Yeah. It's like a little dollhouse, like an outdoor camping dollhouse type of thing. Really, really weird. You know, the interesting thing, too, and this kind of has a little bit of a similarity to Stu Maker to me, too, is when Red is first telling Lizzie about this case, about poachers, and you see the video in the background with the tigers, and he's talking about, Lizzie's just like, yeah, well, it's just poachers, nothing against them. Yeah, I mean, animal rights, definitely important, but compared to everyone else, yeah, not for the FBI, not for what this task force is about. We're going to be chasing poachers, and to see Red get very personal, and you could see him get really angry. Lizzie actually stops and says, wow, this is really important to you. So, and I kind of remember that too with the Stewmaker. When he, right before he killed the Stewmaker, he had that same kind of like anger toward this.
Well, you know, the things that are really funny to me about episodes like this that happen, I mean, it happens in all shows, because it's clear the writers and the producers want to actually have an episode that clearly deals with this.
Yeah.
And what we find over and over again is that we deal with the poachers directly, but no one ever really wants to take the deep dive into the cultural reality that leads into it. They talk about it, but no one ever shows you never see a shot of a Chinese market in China where they're selling this crap.
Yeah.
Because this is a thing people believe. They believe that you can actually get, if you grind up this bone, you grind up that bone, you get a dinosaur fossil, you get whatever nonsensical thing they believe, this is real. In mainland China, this is real in India, this is real in huge countries where huge populations, but no one wants to take it on. It's really funny. Like, they always want to go, we'll get mad at the poachers and we'll talk about this, but we're not going to show up because then we're going to get in deep-ish. It's really funny to me.
Yeah.
You know, because you just don't see the next step, which is, I think, you know.
Oh, again, it's very interesting.
It would be a cultural catastrophe, truthfully.
Yeah. And I mean, even Red says they're not really poachers, they're traffickers, and he talks about the poor devils who do the killing are just a small cog in this monster
money
machine.
On it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, these are the guys that do all the work.
I mean, we have this idea maybe that there's enough, big fat white guys that want to put rhinoceros horns on their walls, but that's not where this is going.
No.
This is medicine. This is the medical beliefs of people who don't understand medicine.
Yeah. I mean, what's it? Samar was talking about all the different uses that they have. And I loved when she looks at Aram and says...
erectile dysfunction?
Yeah.
Poor Aram.
He was so offended.
That was a cute
little...
That's
what he should be. That was
a cute little
I do not have that problem. I need no horn.
I'm loving their little relationship. That may be.
That was their one little nod this week to whatever it is they're
having. Whatever it is.
Right now.
Yes.
No idea. Whatever it is, it's happening. But anyway, so Red sends Lizzie on this case, and again, it seems really important. We figure out that it's personal to him because of Dembe, because of that first flashback.
All this time, I thought he just wanted to save the animals.
Really?
Because
it's usually pretty simple.
I think,
because Red is usually really simple with what he wants.
You can always figure it out.
He
has things that he believes in, too. Wants to save the animals?
It took me a while to figure. I mean, it was halfway through his monologue about Dembe before I realized it was about Dembe.
Really?
And I was like, idiot.
Well, let's move on. We'll talk a little bit more about the case as we get a little bit more into the story. But let's talk a little bit about Lizzie, because we do see Lizzie get a text toward the beginning of the episode, an urgent text from her man, her bouncer guy, who is
Ronaldo,
who's hanging out, watching guard over this big boiler room door.
Mm-hmm.
And we see her go over there, and Ronaldo's completely knocked out. And she runs over to the door to see if whatever it is that's behind the door, if everything's okay, and who comes out but hot sniper guy.
Hot sniper motel guy.
Hot sniper motel
love
guy.
Love that guy. He's a good tail.
Julia loved this. He's a good tail. Julia really loved this episode. For those of you only listening to us, Julia's doing jazz hands.
Jazz hands, sparkle fingers.
Yes, totally, sparkle fingers.
Very proud of myself.
Yes, she's very proud of herself this week. Amazing.
I know this week.
Apparently.
Why you gotta crap on it? She deserves credit. She won. She won Blacklist.
He'll never let
whatever
me
that
put
means,
it.
She won.
Won
she
won the Blacklist.
She won the Blacklist. Very good.
Tell her what she's won, Jim. Yeah. Well, Mom.
So. Hot sniper.
Not right, because Nando's trying to take it away.
I'm not trying to take it away. No, I'll give you its credit where it's due. Anyway, so.
It's like pulling effing teeth.
Honest to God.
Getting into love
continue
out of the
on,
game.
Razzle's not here.
On.
I'm lead host. I'll tell you when I'm
you
sorry.
You tell me when it's
up. I'll tell you when it's up. No, anyway, so we see Hot Sniper Guy apparently has a couple more lines this week.
Yes.
That's one thing that's been missing. So,
yeah, I like that they have him up on the stage. The way he did it was really nice. You want to tell Red or should I?
Yeah. I thought it was good.
First mistake. I mean, come on. She's obviously trying to elude him at all costs. She has this big, I don't even know what you call this, this big underground
sniper
contraption holding some guy.
But,
I'm going to give you a shot. Let me
toss this out there because I pee standing up and therefore I am susceptible to massive stupidity. She had girls strip in front of him. She had her double chick. So as far as he's concerned, they're in a relationship of some sort. I mean, you know, it's not even like, it's not intentional, but the guy, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, boobs. All right. boobs.
All right, fair enough. There's a lot of power.
So, boobs. You want to call him boobs or should I boobs call him first? That's how it works. We're not very smart.
And that's a look into the mind of Joe Santolippo.
You're welcome, America.
Yes. You're welcome, America. Boobs. There we go. So... So anyway, Hot Sniper Guy being really, really nice and
so
giving
being
Lizzie
chivalrous is
being
what he was
chivalrous.
Saying.
And what does he get for it?
Gets thrown in jail.
He gets thrown in jail. A SWAT team knocking on his motel room door, putting him in handcuffs, and a big report in the news about the feds being this close to capturing
his connection to Red.
Red Reddington.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a baller move on Liz's part. That was a
kind of a baller move, but it also shows that whatever it is in that room, she wants to protect that secret
badly. What's in that room, Nando?
I don't know. I was writing notes when they did the reveal.
Okay. We'll get there. Don't worry about
we'll
it. We'll get there.
But anyway, so Hot Sniper Guy in the jail, in the pen, in the big sty. I don't know. I'm trying to think of names for it.
That's not a thing. I don't think the big sty is a thing.
Maybe your apartment.
Yeah. Oh, God. He's locked
Raz,
up.
Raz, welcome back. Anyway, he's in jail, and Red, of course, talking to Lizzie about the fact that he knows that something's up. Obviously, this guy's in jail, and Red has no access to be able to talk to him for a reason, and it's because he knows something that Lizzie doesn't want him to reveal.
Yeah.
So we get to see a little bit of play on that.
Nice to see Red livid at Lizzie.
Well, I like the way they played it too. Just like the poor sniper guy is just like a plaything. He's like a pawn.
Oh yeah,
in their little game. It's really and he's rotting in the cell, and then Red had to let her know I know what you're doing. I don't know exactly, but I know. And then Lily's well, too bad. Mm-hmm. Snotty.
She's snotty.
So let's talk a little bit about let's get into these things. Okay, so let's talk about Wrestler. Yes.
Okay.
So I guess we see Wrestler at a pharmacy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I forgot about that scene.
Remember that scene?
That's right.
That scene, he's at a pharmacy, and apparently his prescription got stolen. Somebody broke into his car. So, he needed a replacement. It wasn't really being refilled, rather replacement, because he never really took any pills before it got stolen. So
they say. So says the junkie.
Yes.
I don't know about the rest of you, but when I watched this, I marveled at how many prescriptions must have gotten stolen out of Rush Limbaugh's car. Oh, I mean, just considering, so you got to try and finagle the prescription. You're getting maybe 30 pills. The man was taking 47 Oxycontin a day. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, my God, how many guys did he have going to get prescriptions for him? That's insanity.
Sure.
But it really is. I mean, I'm so glad that they're doing this episode. I wish they would have Wrestler miss a shave. I think that would be great. I think that would be a terrific thing if maybe one day Diego came to the set without shaving.
Okay.
I like that.
Yes. For different reasons.
Apparently,
you guys
both will like that.
But I really do think this is such a good thing they're touching on, because this has become the scourge of modern America.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just the numbers are absolutely mind-blowing.
It's staggering.
How many people are dying of prescription drug overdoses? And, I mean, you've got these classes of narcotics that are being prescribed like they're not narcotics. These are opium-based drugs. They're insane. It's insane what our doctors are doing right now. And it's just
their willingness to hand them out.
It's madness. It's like giving kids heroin. Straight up, here's some heroin. Let's see what happens. This is crazy.
Well, then at least good on the pharmacist for not
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad they touched on that.
Absolutely.
I'm glad they touched on that.
And I really thought that was way too clean a scene and way too easy because he's an FBI agent. He could have made that a lot uglier.
Yeah, he could have. He could have been all entitled and tried to,
But I think he's nervous. I mean, I think he's scared by what he's becoming and the lengths that he'll go to. I mean, he broke his thumb. He smashed his thumb in a car door. Like, that's insane.
Yes.
Those are the lengths that you go to. That's what these drugs make you do.
Oh, absolutely. So
it is a wild thing. I'm glad they're touching on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, I'll talk more about that. But yeah, okay. So we see pills this episode, or rather, we don't see pills.
Oh, we see many pills.
We see at that scene. We don't see pills because he didn't get any pills. We just see a pill bottle.
But it's about pills.
Yes,
pills,
okay, I know.
Raswell wanted me to ask, hey guys, what's Nando's favorite Destiny's Child song, huh?
What is Nando's favorite Destiny's Child song?
Pills, pills, pills. There's a song that goes along with it, but I don't know if I had the guts to sing it.
No, you have the guts to start it. You should do it. You started it.
All right, well, let me look it up.
Let's hear everybody, Julia Carolee singing.
This is right from Braswell himself.
Okay.
This is for you, Braz. I can't believe doing this.
I can't believe it either.
Wrestler's taking pills. He eats a whole lot of pills. He has to have all his pills. I don't think he knew. So Nando's takes our poo. There you go. Joe Braswell. Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just amazed that Braswell uses poo in his vocabulary. That's the thing. It rhymed. I know it rhymed in that case.
It rhymed.
Okay, so yes. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I did not predict no pills this episode. but still.
100 people die from prescription drug overdose every day in the U.S.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. They definitely should do, they should have a PSA on that. Like The More You Know or something.
Well, NBC should do something on that. Me was even paying attention to what we're saying, we'd have one.
Well, that's okay. So that's 2 weeks in a row, I think. Ah!
Thank you, Lemieux.
Thank you.
I wasn't even looking for that. I was just saying there really should be a PSA on it. I wasn't talking about our
I'm sure there is.
I mean, that's insane. Those numbers are crazy. Every day, 100 people overdosing, that's nuts.
Mm. No, it's crazy.
Worth getting into.
Yeah, so we see Wrestler apparently still addicted to pills over his over what happened last season, over him getting shot, over his partner dying while he was on duty in the club, over all this stuff. So we see Wrestler ends up, through the case, we see Wrestler is going out to Alaska. They figured out that this whole thing's happening in Alaska. We meet Peter Fonda. Peter Fonda sends him to this one guy who's...
He sends him to Lee Chung of the Emerson Concord Imports. And what they do, they import game meats and animal parts from endangered species.
Mm, good.
So it's sort of a front. I paid attention.
Yeah.
So this this Emerson Concord Imports is sort of a front for Mombasa.
Yes. And we assume at this point that Mombasa is doing all the hits on these other cartels.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the line of thinking there. But anyway, so we trace that to Animal Underground, which is out of Alaska.
Formerly out of Alaska.
Yes.
Formerly
out
of Alaska.
It was folded up in the '70s.
Yes, absolutely. So, but we trace it to where they were. Their location was
Sitka,
Alaska, and we see
the dead center of BFE.
Those creepy scenes. That creepy scene in the opening when we see that man, the one from Paris, skinned alive on the shore of Russia. And we figured the other one, too. We figure out the currents from the ocean. They both came from the same location in Alaska. Wrestler gets sent up there. He doesn't have any pills. So, because he was trying to get him before he left. Oh, and he was apparently a little agitated when he was when they were detaining Chung. Was that his name?
Yes.
Yeah, he was a bit agitated. Chung. And Lizzie even brought up that he was late for a meeting. So,
but
you know,
he did not miss a shave.
He did not miss a shave.
That's why he's late.
He was shaving. Clearly.
Shaving,
and
you know.
Pills.
You're in the bathroom, you're taking pills, there's a razor. Why not? Let's do two things at once. So Wrestler goes up there, and we see this really creepy, I mean, to the extent of what he wants to get his pills, he's up in Alaska, he didn't get anything from the pharmacy down in D.C., so instead
he's
got the shakes, he puts his thumb up against his car door, opens the door, slams his thumb.
And you know, not for anything, those Jeep doors are very light, so I mean, he had to slam it really hard. It's not like with, you know, an old Oldsmobile where you got a lot of door, you know, that's a Jeep, that's a light door. You know, he had to hit himself hard, that's difficult work.
That is difficult. I could not see myself do that.
No, I don't think I could.
I could not do that.
You must really
got to
want
get those pills.
Yeah.
Got to get those pills. Absolutely. So anyway, so Wrestler gets pills. He has some pills on him. He goes over to the house where the creepy family are at. And
the house is owned. The house was bought after the 1971 Animal Underground Network, where
at
they
auction.
Were busted. Yeah, it was bought at auction by
Wendigo LLC,
which no one really knows exactly what they do, but they know they have to check it out because this was like the bunker.
Yes.
For the Sitka 7.
And again, this is. I'm just going to toss it out there because I have to.
Please do.
FBI, WTF.
One guy.
One effing guy.
Well, but in all fairness, it's one guy going to a property that there's supposed to be nobody at, just checking it out in Alaska. So
one guy.
Are you really going to send a team of like SWAT to Alaska?
Man, if you called me and said, Flippo, I got to go into this shady neighborhood over here just because I got to pick up a picture of I don't even know what, I'd at least say you should bring a friend. And if it's not going to be me, be somebody else. FBI, I'm going to go over to investigate a thing in a creepy neighborhood up in the middle of nowhere where I don't know anybody. One guy, FBI, please.
Well, don't forget, he's popped up on pills. So he wasn't thinking clearly anyway.
He's all hopped up on pills.
He's all nice.
Marijuana, cigarettes, and crack cocaine.
Nice. So he meets the mama of the family, and she just gives him a little spiel. Peter comes over. Apparently he's got goats under the tarp on his pickup. Wrestler asks to take a look, gets knocked out for
and
his trouble.
Who's there? Yes. Lee Chung.
Lee Chung's out there, all gagged up, mm-hmm. trying to say something, and Wrestler gets knocked out. And of course, you know, he's hopped up on pills, so we would assume he's not fast on his game to really recover. And we see that really creepy scene with the two of them in their own little cages.
Mm-hmm. With their ear tags.
With the ear tag.
Ooh, those ear tags really creeped me out.
There's a lot. That's the thing.
That adds to the whole horror element of it, I feel like.
Well, makes us animals, you know?
Exactly.
It takes away all of our humanness.
Yeah, with that humanness. Mm. With that eerie music in the background. Something very, you know, again, like very horror movie associated.
Yeah, I got to say, sound design last few weeks has been spot on.
I agree.
They've been killing it.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Really great selections.
Absolutely.
So thanks, sound guys.
So music stops playing and the cages are released, and then we get to see Matthew at work with a weird howl. He's got, was that like a crossbow? I guess
no,
using,
that was a bobo.
That was a bobo? He's just using a bobo?
You don't have to call it a bobo. It's just a bow. My fault. I apologize.
Okay.
I was misleading. That's my fault.
Matthew's got a bow, and we see Chung and Wrestler going at it, trying to figure out a way out, but they're kind of wrestling each other. Next thing you know, Chung shot through the heart. Totally gone.
You know, when I was watching that quick little scene between Chung and Wrestler, mm-hmm. I was wondering, which would I be? Would I be the Chung in this, or
yeah.
would I be the Wrestler? Like, Chung, he just wanted to peace out. He just wanted to run as fast as he could. But Wrestler, even though he's, you know, has the shakes because he's in withdrawals from his pills, he has the peace of mind to take a step back and really think about it. How long was your drive over here? I was at a gas station about 15 minutes before I got here. Like, which would I be?
So,
I'd probably just run my ass off for the
hills. Here's the thing. Peace of mind. Chung's plan was better. The only reason that Wrestler didn't get shot is because Chung got shot.
Because Wrestler kept them behind.
Picked him up, and then Chung got shot.
He pretty much held
him. That Wrestler used Chung as a pincushion for the first bow, for the first arrow shot.
I kind of agree with Flippo on that.
But Wrestler was, he had some smart moves when he was out there.
Chung might not have escaped, regardless, but Chung standing there, getting taken, picked up like that, he's still target, pretty easy target for Matthew to get. I was actually thinking about this too. I was thinking, what would happen if I was in that situation? I think the first thing I would do, I probably wouldn't do what either would do. The cages are obviously pointing in one direction.
You go the other way.
I would go the other way. Because I would assume that they were pointing in one direction because that's where the arena is, and I would say, no, let's go
smart.
The other direction.
That's smart.
That's the only thing I could think of.
I would
probably still be dead, but that's the only thing I could think of.
I would hate running with the damp pants that I would have on.
Well, apparently
I pissed them a long time ago. So running with tight, wet jeans is uncomfortable.
You should take
like
a note.
Yes. Much cold out
you
there.
Apparently,
it's warm at first, but then it gets cold.
Awful.
You should apparently take a note from my playbook.
Yeah, just don't wear pants.
Don't,
like
don't wear pants. And then you don't have to worry about running
and you'll
in
escape every time. Right?
They'll let you escape. They'll be like, right this way, sir.
Right after you, sir.
They'll just close their eyes and let me walk right through.
Are those silk tidy whities? Where do you even find those? Never mind. Just go.
Just keep going.
Just keep going. Don't stop.
That's funny.
Don't stop at all. So Wrestler ends up finding this really creepy campsite dollhouse thing, which was really, really, oh my God, that was so eerie the first time we saw that whole thing with the music and just seeing those guys with those big black eyes. Really, really crazy.
Yeah.
And but then smart on him. I actually thought it was a smart move. We see Matthew later on. I guess he kind of gave up or figured he needed a break from his howling and everything, and went to hang out with his friends and have a conversation, sit on the campfire. The only, how do you keep a fire like that on all the time? I wonder too.
Well, you know, I don't know.
Without burning any of your dolls.
I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. But
no,
anyway.
Maybe you build it up good, I guess. I don't know.
I'm a little surprised that Matthew wasn't, like, checking and saying, hey, one of these guys I didn't stuff.
Well, you know, he replaced one of the guys, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he put on his costume.
Which can't be easy.
Oh, I guess no. He did, yeah. That must be really
weird.
But
then once again, the shaking
gave him away because he's addicted to something,
porn? He's addicted to painkillers.
Pills.
He likes the pills.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, so we see a little fight, and look, Matthew is super tall. I mean, when I saw that scene with him in the bathtub coming up,
yeah,
with that little Kris Kringle beard to make him look kind of sweet and adorable, even though he's not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking, what would happen if he was one-on-one against, like, wrestler or somebody? So we see a little bit
looks
of that.
Like a strong boy.
Strong boy, but wrestler is able to get a knock into him with the arrow shaft that he got from Chung earlier. Mm-hmm. So we get to see this really sad scene with him and his mom at the end when the FBI finally show up. So you're really happy to bust in. You must have been happy.
Apparently, the FBI has plenty of people in Alaska.
It took them a little while, but they have plenty of people in Alaska. And we see this really sad scene with the mom and Matthew in the tub together.
I have to say before that the mom, played by Phyllis Somerville, I love everything
that woman does.
Great.
She's really
little
neat.
Children, the big C, Case Benjamin Button. She has this way about her that she will just strike the fear of God in you.
Yeah, there's something very, very, what's the term I'm looking for? Grounded and real about her. There's something incredibly
salt of the earth.
Yeah, something
salt.
She's
of the
very,
earth.
Very real. So when you hear her, when you listen, there's no question. You don't feel like she's acting. You just feel like you're there's an authority in what she does. I enjoy it. I buy her.
Well, I thought the acting all around was really, really great from everybody.
And I liked Peter, too. I think
Peter
was great.
Yeah.
Like, really, really, like, hey, I'm just an earnest, really nice guy who does some crazy-ish every now and then.
It's a family business.
Mom,
you had to do what you had to
cray-cray.
Do.
Mom's cray-cray.
It is cray. I don't say cray-cray. Sorry.
Is Peter fond of his father, too?
Yeah, Peter fond is the
Is Peter's dad, too?
Yes. No. Yes.
Because she called him father when they were talking about going back out. Said father's father has another person, and he reacted to that. So, but he just looks more closer to Jeff's age, Jeff Carl's age, than you would think. Actually, they all looked pretty old. Even Matthew looked pretty old.
But you got to keep in mind, Peter Fonda is a 33rd most wealthiest. I talk English when I speaks good.
I don't know about Peter Fonda, but Jeff Carl.
Jeff Carl, he's playing the 33rd wealthiest man on the planet, right?
Yes.
So you got to assume that he's got access to whatever he needs to stay young.
Jeff Pearl?
Jeff Carl.
Is it Carl or Pearl?
Jeff Pearl.
It is Pearl.
You guys were confusing me. I was just going along with it. I was like, Jeff Pearl.
Sorry about that.
I messed up a name.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
You know, it was interesting to me watching Peter Fonda because, you know, I easy rider for me always. It's that, you know, anytime I see him do anything else, I'm just like, yeah, but get on the motorcycle. Let's take a... But it was funny, you know, it's interesting. I felt like there were a couple of spots in this episode where the writers overrode a little bit. There was like a couple of things for Lizzie and a couple of things for Peter Fonda's character.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few lines more than they were comfortable with. And it was really neat to see him kind of sit there with Red, because just Peter Fonda being himself, just the actor, gave him enough oomph to be in the room with James Spader.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To make it a good enough,
taking away from other guest stars that they've had or regulars on this show, but when you put a heavy hitter like Peter Fonda with a heavy hitter that is James Spader, there's just a brevity that's brought to the room that I just can't wait to watch, and it just changes everything. Because I feel like a lot of the times, James Spader, he runs the show as well. He should. This is his show. But when you have him against someone like this, it changes everything.
Well, and this is a really interesting. Let's get to that scene because, I mean, you know, we saw the death scene. That was really, really creepy and interesting. But the scene between Red and Jeff, Pearl. was really, really interesting also because we got to see a couple of swerves here that apparently Jeff Pearl, who was an animal activist, was really actually a poacher himself. And he was just trying to get rid of the competition and control the supply and demand situation. So honestly, he wasn't really that nice a person to begin with. You know, I had a feeling when we first saw him with Lizzie, but he's not a nice person. And we hear this whole big story about Dembe, which of course is Red, what James Spader does so well Red. You know, he just has all these different emotions and reactions.
It's very layered.
Very layered. Just this beautiful, beautiful scene with Dembe about what happened in the beginning of the episode that we saw and how Red found him. And we see Dembe just show up. And really, really, even excellent acting from Dembe as well, from Dembe's character, because here's the man who probably should want revenge on anyone who, you know, part of the cartel. And he's just like, no. It's not worth it. Let it go.
It's a long time ago.
Let it go. And Red, you know, without missing a beat, goes, see, that's what separates him from people like you.
Good people, right? Is that what he says?
Yeah, good people. And that's what separates him from people like you and me.
No question.
Bam.
Boom, yeah.
Kills him dead.
There was no way Peter Fonda was leaving that room.
Beautiful, beautiful work. Beautiful scene. I loved seeing that. I loved learning about Dembe. Learning a little bit
Rough
more about
Dembe.
He's one of our favorite characters, so it's great to see a little more backstory on him.
Am I the only one who felt like at the end of that scene, though, I felt like Peter Fonda's character was actually more correct than everybody else in a lot of ways? Like, if you do look at this as an honest to goodness problem to be dealt with, then wouldn't a controlled monopoly be
a natural monopoly? Well,
I think sometimes that's what's great. That's what makes a great villain, because villains never think that they're doing bad
or
evil.
You're 100%
they
right.
They always think there's a reason for their cause, and I think that justification sometimes makes a really, really good villain, because you know it's a lot of antiheroes. I mean, this is the era of the antihero. Anyway, I mean, if this was another kind of show, perhaps this character would have been an antihero for what he's doing.
Yeah,
you know, kind of like a Walter White. For example, you know, doing it for the greater good, for what he believes is the greater good, even if it's not.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's an amazing, amazing work all around by that.
Here's a question. So going into this episode, when Red gave Lizzie this case of the Mombasa cartel, do you think he knew from the get-go that Jeff Pearl was the guy he was going after? Because it seemed to be a moment that switched in his head.
When he was in the car, it switched in his head.
Yes, and then he put that together.
Wendigo
so originally,
LLC.
Yeah.
Wendigo LLC was what tipped him off.
Yeah.
But originally, in giving this this case to the FBI, was it strictly revenge for Dembe? What was it to save the animals? Like, what was the original plan?
I feel like it was a Dembe. It had to be something else, because we've seen every single episode that Red's had an ulterior motive.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering. Now, at the end, he got the comprehensive list of all the members of the Mombasa cartel and all of their distribution networks and whatnot.
So he did get that.
So maybe that was his... I'm just wondering what his motive was in the very beginning.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out in a future episode. But he did give that list to the task force. So whatever it is, he actually is sharing this information with the task force as opposed to having them do all the work.
I think he just
wants
to see
the animals. And then
he has
his own thing.
I think that's the point of the entire blacklist. Save the animals. There you go, guys.
You're welcome, right, NBC.
We'll see if Julia... we'll see if you win the battle. All right, we don't have much time, so there's two things I want to bring up. First of all, we want to talk about Zoe, because we saw a couple of scenes with Zoe. We saw Red make that connection with Zoe. He dropped his hat off at the little street cafe food truck. And she goes chasing after him. So there was a lot of talk on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, about some theories that why are we assuming that this is Red's daughter? This might be Brooklyn's daughter. Why are we assuming they're twins? What do you guys think? I mean, I have to admit, you know, the fact that they had this face-to-face meeting, even though it's been years since she would have seen her dad if Red is her dad, do you feel like there should have been some more familiarity? Do you think that maybe Red is pursuing his daughter here, if Jennifer / Zoe is his daughter or not?
Well, if it is his daughter, which I think it is, I think like I've said before, I'll say it again. I think they're sisters. I think they're both Red's daughters.
Yeah.
And you know, it was really interesting to me to see the kind of duality of the scene. They're both giving false names. Mm-hmm. You know, what did he say his name was? Kenneth, something or other.
Yeah, Kenneth.
And she's got Zoe, which is not her name, and that's not his name.
Yeah.
But I thought it was very charming, and it very much reminded me of Red back in the day with Liz last season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously it should. Because same damn position. I know a lot of people are kind of... But that's the whole point of this whole thing, right? Isn't it? Get us all talking, get us all thinking. There's a bunch of different things going on.
It could be a swerve, and maybe it's not Red's daughter. You know, there's a possibility. I mean, I think there are some good points about it not being Red's daughter. You might have assumed too much.
Whatever.
You know, I think there are some definitely good points. What do you think, Julia?
I my inclination is that it is his daughter.
Okay. I seem to think so,
just
too.
Just with the sincerity that he goes about his conversations with her, mm-hmm. the way he treats her, mm-hmm. the way he watched her and went out of his way to find her.
Yeah.
Because we know he goes out of his way to take care of the ones that mean the most to him, mm-hmm. Naomi, Lizzie, and now Jennifer/Zoe.
So you think that and Demby. Mm-hmm. So you think Zoe is his daughter, but what about Lizzie? You still on the fence with that one?
You
think there's still a relation between those two?
I still don't think Lizzie is his daughter.
Or was Zoe and Lizzie? Maybe it's possible that there's a relationship between those two.
There might be.
That is might not Zoe be Lizzie's daughter.
There it is.
Done. There it is.
Boom.
You need to not wear pants more often, Joe.
Damn right. What do you say?
And the last thing let's talk about really quickly is let's talk about that final scene. We get to see the return of a character that Julia predicted.
Sure did.
Fine.
Sure
but
did.
We all kind of
she
assumed about a week or two ago. We assumed this was going to happen.
So predicted real good.
We get to see.
I predicted that one hard.
She predicted the ish out of that one.
Oh, boy. Tom Keen back in the blacklist.
Back in the blacklist.
A little scruffy, a little grizzlier.
There's a little scruff going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it's got a little bit just in time for Movember.
He's raising awareness.
Exactly. That's why
he's in there.
Thank you, Tom. So thoughts about this last
scene.
So
you live in a deep Movember. For those of you who don't know, Julia Kearley's husband, Eric, will grow something ridiculous every November.
It's impressive. It's
astounding. Mm. And he's one of those guys where if he just kind of like really hard, he blows really hard, it's unreal.
Wow, that's amazing.
He grows a mustache and beard in 15 minutes.
So, anyway, just to keep this on track because we don't have much time. So Tom is Lizzie's source, or at least Tom has been giving her information. We don't know to the extent of what Lizzie knows.
He's told her everything she's asked. He's answered all her questions.
That's it. He's answered all her questions.
For God's sakes, if you're going to kill me, kill me.
Yeah. So,
look me in the eye while you do it.
So what do you think this means?
So ridiculous.
Oh,
go on. What do you think about?
No, what do you think this? Well, you know what? Let's move on. Like, are we done with just about everything with this episode?
I think so.
We're about done with this?
All right,
let's do predictions.
I hear snakes.
And now, well,
it is October.
It is.
Yes. So anyway, what do you think Tom being back on the show, now that we know that Tom is Lizzie's source, that Tom is in captivity, that Lizzie never killed him, which we assumed from the end of last season, that she didn't kill him, what do you think this means for Red and for the rest of the show?
I don't know.
It's a prediction.
Okay.
What do you say? All right, well, general predictions then. That is a prediction in itself, but what do you see? What do you think? Julia.
Well, I obviously think that Red's. I don't have any strong ones. I think I'm done with those for this week. But I think Red's going to discover that Lizzie has Tom.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know what that's going to mean yet.
Okay. Fair enough.
And I do think though that Lizzie is going to help Rester get clean.
Okay. I see that. I don't see any pills in the future.
I mean, she gave him the bottle back,
yeah.
But now he's on her radar, and I think she's going to make him a little
project. I had a whole rant about the pills that I can't go into because we're running short on time, judging by the music, but mm-hmm. I definitely feel that the pills was a wrong character choice for whatever's going on because I think it's pretty much over. Now that Lizzie knows,
I knew it was going to last the whole thing, and we're almost done with the first half of the season.
Yeah, but it wasn't a major plot point, but I have a whole rant, but I'll save that for another time. But what do you think?
Here's my prediction.
Yeah.
I think that he left the hat. I think that that Red left the hat because he wanted to get Zoe's DNA. So I think now that she's handled the hat, he's got her DNA on the hat.
Ooh.
And so now he's going to be able to back it all up exactly who she is, exactly what he needs out of her.
Wow.
So he'll be able to lay it all in.
That's an interesting one. I like that one.
So that's a DNA right there. It's a DNA angle.
And I'm going to predict...
You watch a lot of Law & Order, don't you?
I do. SVU.
And even though I'm being played out, I'm going to predict that Lizzie and Tom are going to have a little rekindling of romance. We've seen that because obviously there's some feelings still going on. Where can we find you, Miss Carolee?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram with my name, Julia Carolee, JULIACEARLEY.
And Mr. Sam Flippo.
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo, JOEFLIPO. And my website is josephsamflippo.com. And I said last week, I'll say it again, check out Miss Erin's magical dance class if you have a young kid or related to a young kid that could use enjoys dance class. It's something I produce and I'm very proud of.
And you can find me, you can lower it a little bit, Steve, I'm wrapping up. You can follow me at Nandovel on Twitter, NANDOVEL. You can also find me here on other shows like The Walking Dead and Scorpion and some other show and Homeland. Anyway, tune in next week. Joe Braz will be here to run the show properly. Thanks.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.